The Bookthinger podcast is a lively discussion about romance books, culture, and hard science. This is episode 26, featuring Six de los Reyes and Suzette de Borja in Metro Manila. Bookthinger would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this episode was produced and pay respects to their elders, both past and present.
Welcome to the Bookthinger podcast, talking about books we love, especially romance. Kill a fairy fast on the Bookthinger podcast.
Welcome back to the Bookthinger podcast. I'm Kat Mayo from bookthinger.com.au, an Aussie blog for romance readers. Today's episode features two guests, two indie authors from the Philippines, both of whom work in the scientific field in their day jobs. Six de los Reyes is a marine biologist by day, and she wrote a fabulous book called Beginner's Guide, Love and Other Chemical Reactions. I reviewed this book on the blog, but it's also received a lot of buzz online, particularly when Courtney Milan tweeted about how much she loved the book and compared it to The Rosie Project. Suzette de Borja is a medical doctor, and she writes contemporary romances featuring billionaires and dukes and princesses. I've read The Duke Takes a Bride, which features a fake engagement between the heroine and her childhood crush, her brother's best friend. I love these tropes and I really enjoy this book, and the rest of Suzanne's backlist is on my TBR. Six, Suzette and I talk about the stigma of writing romance and the inspiration for writing about characters who do hard science. Occasionally we refer to Mina, who I spoke with in the previous podcast episode. You can find more information on all the books we talk about in this episode by going to bookthinger.com.au/podcast and clicking on episode number 26.
Hi, I'm Suzette de Borja, and I write contemporary romance novels, and I'm currently working on book two of one of the billionaire series, and I'm happy to be here. Hi, Kat.
Hi, so the title of your latest novel?
When She Fell for the Billionaire.
So hi, I'm Six de los Reyes, and I write contemporary romance in new adult and also young adult. The latest thing that I wrote and released into the wild is called Beginner's Guide, Love and Other Chemical Reactions.
I know, I love that title, and I know you've been posting teasers on Twitter, and I'm like, oh, I want to read this book. Let's begin with something really easy. What inspired you to become a writer?
Okay, I think it had to do with, well, being a reader first was what pushed me into becoming a writer. But the earliest thing I remember that had to do with writing was writing fan fiction about a boy band.
Which boy band?
Oh my God, they're from Puerto Rico. So at that time, I didn't know that. I don't think the term fan fiction even existed. So my best friend and I, we were crushing on the same boy band member. And we would like be on the phone and thinking up of this, the plot and writing it down. And we would take turns per chapter. So I think that was what started it. So fast forward to college, and I joined university contests for writing. Yeah, so that's how I started.
And did you read romance, or did that come later?
Well, my first memory of reading romance was by the author Emily Loring. And that was like a real, I don't know what year it was written, but it was in the bookshelf of one of my grand aunts. And then after that, I started reading Sweet Dreams. And then eventually, I moved on to Harlequin. And at that time, it was known here as Milsen Boone. Yeah, so that's the progression.
See, because you write billionaires and dukes, so I would have predicted Milsen Boone as your like entry into romance as well. How about yourself, Six? What inspired you to become a writer?
I think it was more of a natural progression for me. Because as far back as I can remember, I've always had these stories in my head, and I'd make them up as I go. And then when I was, I think, 10 or 11, I actually started writing them down. And it was more because I wanted to read something, but it wasn't available to me yet, or I couldn't find a way to make it available to me. So instead of looking, I just made my own. And I remember sharing these stories with my seatmates, and my best friend sat behind me and she liked to draw. So I'd give her like scenes and she'd start drawing them. Then after class, we'd still talk on the phone and talk about, so what happens next? So do our characters already meet here, or do they have like a fight scene or whatever? So that's how it went. And I always just started writing. And ever since I started writing, it would be in secret. There would always be this very, very small, very exclusive group that would know that I would write. And this continued on high school and until college. And it wasn't until recently that I sort of came out of the writing closet to tell the rest of the world that, oh, by the way, I write stuff.
Do you have to juggle your writing persona with who you are outside of writing?
There's a big, big clash between my writing persona and who I am in real life. Well, right now I am an unemployed marine biologist, so I spend more time writing than I do working. But during the time that I had projects and I had experiments to work on, it was very hard making time to write because I was still writing even at work. I had to write all these papers and I had to do all these experiments. And the people at the lab have no idea that I have this other persona. That there's a big clash there because I can't really tell them or anyone in that part of my world, because there's a lot of judgment that comes with.
So there's like a social consequence?
Yeah, it's a pretty big consequence. I think it's bigger than I make it out to be. But when people start seeing you a certain way and then you tell them something else, it sort of creates this incongruence, and it's just hard to deal with people. So it's, I think for me, it's better that this and that are two very different things.
Have you found that in your writing career, Suzette, or is it different for you? Because you also work in the science field, right?
Yes, I'm a physician, but I'm not actively practicing right now like I used to when I was single. So it's more of like there's a balance, because in the clinic, it's just me, the patient, the secretary. So there's like no colleagues or people always around you. So they don't usually know what I'm up to when I'm behind the office. So I haven't told a lot of people that I'm writing romance. Number one, I used a pen name. I didn't want it to, you know, when they search me online, I didn't want my profession to come out and then my author persona. But with some people that I've told, I've revealed that I'm writing, I didn't get the reaction I was expecting.
Were you expecting a negative reaction or a positive reaction?
Actually, I was expecting them to be just a neutral reaction. But like some people, they weren't, well, someone said that it would be more impressive if I told them that I've taken up law rather than writing.
Okay.
So after that, it was a doctor. So after that, I said, okay, I won't tell. I won't go around telling
people. Right, because that's a bit dispiriting to hear something like that.
And then somebody would, when I say I write romance, immediately they think that, so you're writing like 50 Shades of Grey? So that's an immediate reaction. So after that, I decided, no, I won't go telling everyone. I mean, I'm not keeping it a secret, but I wouldn't go out and announce it to everyone.
What about family? Like, do you tell family that this is a thing that you do?
For me, my sisters know, because I live with them, so they know everything.
Do they read your books?
No, they don't. No. They haven't yet. Nor have they expressed any current interest in reading them at the moment. My parents are peripherally aware that I write, but not that I have published anything yet. And I have had the same experiences. Like, if I do tell people that I write romance, the reactions are a little discouraging. It's a lot different when you say, oh, so what did you do over the weekend? And you could say, oh, I hiked this mountain over the weekend, or I dived this reef over the weekend. And the reactions are, oh, that's nice. And then you move on with the rest of the conversation. But when you tell them, oh, I wrote something, and then what did you write? And if it's not literary or high fantasy or sci-fi or the great, yeah, exactly. If it's not the great Filipino novel, they'd have this look on their faces and, okay, let's move on.
But so is there a view of what romance is, and does it match what romance actually is? Because you mentioned that people ask you if you write 50 Shades of Grey. To people who don't read romance, do you get the impression that that's their view of what romance actually is? Because Filipino romance is so diverse, actually.
I think maybe because of the publicity that went around 50 Shades of Grey, so they tend to think it's something like that.
Because I don't even know how that was received. Like, Philippines is a little bit more conservative than Australia. In Australia, it's like, hey, we're all going to go see this movie. You take your boyfriend, we're going to go see it on Valentine's Day. I don't even know how it was received here, whether it was socially acceptable to admit that you even read that book. There's people whispering behind us going, yeah, yeah, it sold really well. Well, I did notice in the bookshops that it's prominently displayed. Sylvia Day is prominently displayed. There's a lot of works of erotica that are displayed.
But there's a difference between it being displayed in bookstores and you publicly reading the book. If, for example, you're reading on the train or in the bus or at school. And I know some people who wrap their books with whatever or something else, or they hide it inside another book because they don't want people seeing what they read. I think it has more to do with the individual being afraid
to be judged.
To be judged, because it's a legitimate fear, though.
So this is not something I really understand as somebody who grew up in Australia. Yeah. What are the social stigmas attached to reading or writing romance, especially if you're writing steamier romance?
I think the first is the way some people view romance as. It's a lot of fluff and not a lot of substance, which I think also is a product of a lack of awareness of just how diverse romance is. A lot of them aren't even romance readers, so I feel like you can't really say that. You can't have an opinion on something you haven't read about or studied about. That's pretty much about it, I think, for me.
So what stories interest you as a reader or a writer?
Well, when I was younger, I read fantasy, paranormal, a lot of what they call classic literature. And right now, I only want to read books that will leave me happy in the end. I mean,
that's the same with me.
Yeah, this is what happened, I think, after going through a personal crisis, and then I couldn't stand any depressing books. Like what Susan Elizabeth Phillips said, that life's too short for depressing books. I mean, I would read some books which might not have happy endings, but I tend to be a bit more choosy when it comes to reading that. So that's my guilty pleasure, the happy ever afters, which I find in romance. It's a sure thing.
Yeah.
So when I'm stressed and, I want that. I want that at the end, I know what I'm going to. There's a happy ever after. And right now, I'm into biographies. I'm fascinated by Italian Renaissance.
I thought you were going to say Italian men. Like Italian billionaires, Italian Jews.
Yeah. I like, because it's fascinating that I went to, actually it was research for what I'm writing right now, but I discovered there was this warrior countess, and she was a strong woman, and she was perceived as calculating, but it was a biography, and after that, I started reading again, another Italian Renaissance woman. So right now I'm into biographies, and I just recently borrowed a book about the Victorian period.
So are you thinking of writing historicals?
That's what we were discussing, Six and I. I think, I don't know, I have a tendency to go to that research rabbit hole.
Well, because your contemporaries now are set, they are not Filipino characters set in the Philippines, right?
Yes.
They are, I mean, to me, the feel of the books are sort of mainstream US-UK romances.
Well, this was, those books got their, the first book in the series, of the entitled series, came out because of Nina's workshop. We had to write about contemporary sports romance. And at that time, I don't know anything about sports. I don't play any sports. And the thing that fascinated me amongst all of them was polo. So I had to link it to make a story out of it. So, of course, the milieu of the polo, the setting would be glamorous and high society. So that's what started it. And then after that, there was another call for publishing about the beach romance. So I had to set it in another, make this setting, this principality. So it was kind of linked, but they're all standalones. But after this, I plan to write, a romance locally. So, but I have to finish some first for the series.
And historicals, maybe?
Historicals, Not yet.
Let me get through this one first. How about yourself, Six? What do you read and what do you like to write?
I started reading school books at first, like the so-called classics, the classic books that you're required to read in school. And then I started really getting into high fantasy and paranormal. That was me all throughout high school. I read Lord of the Rings, Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan. And that was also the same time I had this romance avoidance phase.
I think we all went through. Well, actually, yeah, I never did, but I think a lot of people have gone through.
Yeah, but that's what I said out loud. But every time I get back home, my mom has this huge library of books, like romance books, like historical romances and some contemporary romances. And when she wasn't looking, I'd read through them. And I think that's really what got me started into romance. Because as satisfying as high fantasy and paranormal is, there's just something about reading a romance that leaves you feeling like you get your happy ever after too, even if it's just a byproduct of the book. So it started with that. And then in college, I had a literary phase also. So there was a lot of Chuck Palahniuk, Haruki Murakami, that kind of stuff. And then recently, I got back into contemporary romance. So I'm pretty new to contemporary romance, but with the number of books that I have been reading lately, not so new. And I think right now what I'm actively seeking are books that have main characters and love interests that are in the STEM fields. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. And it's more because I really want to read about people who are like me or something to that effect. When you read romance books or even chick lit books, you have a lot of people in corporate side of things.
Right, the billionaires, yeah, the billionaires, tycoons, the CEOs.
CEOs, and you also get people in marketing, or sometimes you get lawyers if you're lucky, or you get struggling actresses and
people in the arts.
People in the arts, and you never really find people who do hard science or even math. So I'm actively seeking books that cover the conflicts and the kind of stories that can only be told from the perspective of someone in that field.
So something that gets the science and the math right, not just as a side character trait.
Yes, you don't usually get people from the sciences and maths as the main character. They're sometimes the best friends, or that other person that you meet somewhere, or that the main character needs something, and oh, I have this friend.
Yeah,
who can help you with that? Yeah, you get the sidekick.
The other thing that I've noticed with STEM books is that the characters who are doing science or math are very stereotypical.
That is very true, and that's one of the things that I really want to break out of. Sort of when people hear about, for example, a scientist, they have this vision in their head and that's what they're expecting. But the truth is, science people are just people who do science.
Well, honestly, I did an undergrad science degree, and all the scientists I know basically drank a lot.
They
turned up to labs
and
complained about their PhD.
Exactly.
All the time.
Exactly. That's what they do. They complain all the time, and they go out for drinks after a work day or in the middle of the work day. Science is a very human field that a lot of people don't really see, because what they end up seeing are the finished products. You get to see the robots, you get to see the papers, you get to see the pills and all the new chemical things, but they don't see the process that goes before you get to the pretty shiny final product. And there's a lot of tears.
It's a long process.
It's
and
very
competitive
process,
as well.
It's very competitive.
So, do you think Filipino romance has characteristics that differentiate it from mainstream US romance? I mean, you guys have read books in both markets and you've written books for one or both markets.
I read mostly YA, Filipino romance.
So, with YA, that's interesting because US YA has a very distinctive pattern, I guess, a feeling that you get when you read it. Australian YA has a very different character. Australian YA is really, as far as I can tell, really preoccupied with identity. A lot of it has to do with a multicultural sort of background. So I feel like the YA of the US isn't really represented. I don't think it represents all YA everywhere. So I'm really curious to see whether you think YA here has different characteristics and what they are?
It's actually really very different. For one thing, well, the ages are also different because I think everywhere else, high school, you're older, like 15, 16 to 18.
The Philippines used to only go up to grade 10. Right? And then you're in college. And it's also so socially conservative that really people don't have their first relationships until they're well into college, usually.
Usually.
So the whole notion of YA seems to gear younger for us, for Filipinos.
So the experiences are different because, well, nobody can drive yet. Right. So you really can't get to places. And you live at home and your parents are, they're watching you all the time. And you have to report to them all the time. And when you're in school, you don't really get to do as much as the other YA characters do. So there's a limit to what they think they are capable of doing, what they are actually capable of doing.
Is that reflected in the fiction, in the local fiction? Or do they try to emulate the US books?
As far as I have read, I think they've been trying to emulate the US books because it is what they have read, and because it's what they have read, they kind of get this idea that that is something that they have to write about, or it's a YA experience that they did not get to have when they were that age.
So aspirational, yes.
So that's what. So that is what they write about. And if we were to be completely accurate in our portrayal of local YA, it would be a very different experience. Like, for example, you wouldn't go out to parties unless you're from a really a fancy school. If you're from a public school, you don't really have parties, you really don't go to friends' houses and have a really wild parties like you see in books and in movies. It's not like that.
And you're heavily chaperoned as
well,
right?
Yes, you are.
So I've dabbled in writing teen romance set in the Philippines, and I talked to my cousin who lives here about it, and I was like, oh, I've never, because we don't have prom in Australia. I was like, oh, I've never had prom. Can you tell me about prom? She's like, I went to a girls' school. There was no prom.
Yeah, that's another thing. Not all schools have prom. My high school didn't have prom, but I went to a science high school, so we didn't have a need for prom.
But even parties, I was like, oh, they're going to have parties with drinking. She's like, they're too young to drink.
Yes.
Like, oh, I can't.
Yeah, there's no drinking.
And
no
then
parties.
I was like, yeah, and I was like, how do we do a party without parents? She's like, you can't do a party.
Yeah, you don't do party without parents.
So we had to create like older brothers that are in their 30s that are, you know, a little bit. But it was really funny. It was really interesting.
There are some trips that younger kids could take, but again, heavily chaperoned. You have to have older siblings or one set of parents. Or if they're
the nanny.
Or if they have nannies, you have nannies.
I mean, but even that, a lot of the context is really would be foreign to a U.S. reader. So the concept of nannies, the concept of household help, the concept of even having drivers. So depending on, I guess, where in society your characters are positioned, it all requires explaining if you want a foreign audience to read it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, does that bog down the story?
I think it would be interesting. It's what would make it Filipino. I don't write YA. My daughter is just 8 years old. So, and I think it was like years ago for me. So I don't really know how it is now. My nieces and nephews are very young. So I think with regard to that identity, maybe that will make it different. And that point you raised is interesting now because, you know, there's a call for diversity. And maybe it would be a good time for readers to try it out.
So is it NA then that becomes that cusp of first relationships, first love?
I think so. Another thing about writing a local YA is that you have to take into consideration which part of society you want your characters to be in. For example, my high school experience would be very different from my sister's because they went to all-girls school, which is also a private all-girls school, and I went to a public science high school. So when we share stories, they're also very different. So there's also that you have to consider. So there's a lot, like if you have characters that go to public schools or characters that go to private schools or international
But I mean, that's
schools.
Perfect. Like, you
there's
get
so many stuff
the boy
about,
from the
yes.
Well, the boy from the public school if he's the bad boy, or the boy from the private school if he's the snobby boy, and then the girl from the other school,
from
and
the
then they
school.
Like do like a debate. Like, this is like a movie already, right? So I'm curious to know, and I think we kind of know the answer based on what we've been talking about. If you think there are types of stories that remain unwritten in Filipino romance.
I would like to read and probably write series of romance, like how they do it in the States. Like, you have a family and a series of
well, that would work in the Philippines when you have like 7 kids, right?
Yeah.
And you have like and you have 17 cousins. Yeah. Just from one side.
You could do like the Sinsters of the Philippines, but set in the modern day, and you would not run out of characters.
Actually, I had a work in progress before I joined Mina's workshop, but I was already starting on it, and maybe I'd go back to it. It's about siblings, 4 brothers, and they're in this one business, and it's actually very... There are a lot of Filipinos who have family businesses, so you get all the siblings in one family, they work. So that's one I would like. And urban fantasy.
Yes.
But maybe like a local aswang.
like lower mythology.
Lower mythology, urban fantasy.
Like you could do a white lady romance, I feel.
Yeah, white
that,
lady
that
or
is doable.
Manananggal.
Yeah,
you know what,
that's going to be more challenging, but you could do it. You could do like a reformed Manananggal and see where that takes you. So Manananggal, I don't know, maybe you can explain it.
It's, how do you explain that? She splits.
She splits in half from her torso, and she grows wings.
And then the top half flies away, right?
Yes, the top half flies, and the top half has a really long tongue that eats fetuses from inside the mother's womb. Mm-hmm. That's basically what
And then to kill her, you have to kill the lower body.
Yeah, you have to pour salt on the
to be
on
honest,
the exposed side of the lower half.
My like aspirational romance features like a manananggal who doesn't, who only eats
the vegetarian kind.
Yeah, like who only eats the fetuses that are not viable.
Okay.
But then she's starving all the time because there's just not enough. Anyway, that's a story for a different day. So tell us a bit about your latest release.
Well, it's book 2 of The House of Argenti. It's about an Italian family who owns a fashion company. And the first book was about the brother. And the second book now, which I'm currently writing, is about the sister. But I'm targeting... The key word here is targeting a June release. So,
and you self-publish, or are you published with a local publisher?
It's under Flirt Publishing, so it's a US publisher. So hopefully by June.
The latest book that I released is Beginner's Guide, Love and Other Chemical Reactions, and it's very hard science. I had to decide how much science I wanted in it and how much romance I wanted in it until I kind of realized that I could do both. Because my character, she's a scientist, so it's all about juggling lab work and the love work.
Okay, one of the things I love about the teasers is there's so many puns and so many sort of like in jokes about science and romance. So thank you guys for joining us at the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
We are at the end of another episode, and once again, massive thanks to Rudy Bremer, our audio producer. If you're enjoying the podcast, you can help support us by leaving a review on iTunes or just telling all your reader friends to give us a try. You can also visit bookthingo.com.au to check out reviews and opinions from a bunch of readers from down under, including Rudy and me. And you can also find the show notes for this episode on the website. Our previous episode featuring Mina V. Esguerra received some really great feedback on Twitter. Diem said that listening to Book Thingo started her on being a romance reader and that the Pandesal abs had her drooling slightly. Diem, this is honestly the best and most touching thing to hear as a book blogger. So just, I'm sending so much gratitude your way. Author Jennifer Halleck, whose book Mina and I discussed in the episode, thanked us, calling Mina a pioneer of English language Pinoy romance, and I think that's a well-deserved title. Katrin said, I listened to the podcast today. Fascinating to hear about Binoy romance scene and the cool things Mina is doing. I totally agree. If you have any feedback or suggestions, you can send a tweet at BookThingo, tag us on an Instagram video post, or send an email to podcast@bookthingo.com.au. In the next episode, I chat with Filipino author Katrina Ramos Atienza and journalist/reviewer/author Ronald S. Lim. We talk a lot about reading outside our comfort zones, and we cover some of the nuances that become apparent when you're reading or writing stories that have a different context to what you're used to, particularly if your culture or experience isn't the dominant one in literature. Until then, I hope you have a fabulous fortnight of reading.